ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi there, I'm Sam Hawley, host of ABC News Daily. Our podcast covers one big news story each weekday in just 15 minutes. From history-changing world news to cost-of-living concerns at home, expert guests and ABC journalists explain what matters most. Follow the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
Today, the Australian people have voted for Australian values.
Government is always formed in the sense of the centre, but our Liberal Party reflects a range of views.
Politics is the brutal game of arithmetic, but no one's going to vote for you if you don't stand for something.
We've always been about the planet, but we've got to make sure that people have their daily needs met.
People are starting to see that there is actually a different way of doing politics.
Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis and I'm joining you today from Wurundjeri country in Melbourne.
And I'm Fran Kelly on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation in Sydney. And PK, you know, over the past few weeks we've been talking a lot about the great year the government's had, the fairy tale ending to the Prime Minister's year, literally a honeymoon ending. And now suddenly things have gone dark with this deadly terrorist attack on Bondi Beach on Sunday.
There is no place for this hate, violence and terrorism in our nation. Let me be clear, we will eradicate it. Amidst this vile act of violence and hate will emerge a moment of national unity where Australians across the board will embrace their fellow Australians of Jewish faith.
At this, the fallout from this targeted attack on Jewish Australians attending that Hanukkah event has shocked the world, and I think it has also, you know, clearly rocked and tested our government and our Prime Minister. What do you think?
Fran, it's been, horrific for the country, and I think we're still grappling with the enormity of it. It has changed Australia. I think that's not, I'm not the first person to have made that claim, but I feel it very strongly. And it has now become very politicised, and I think that really adds a level of complexity to it, which will be hard for us to grapple with as well. It's just as clear as this. Instead of it being a unifying moment, it has brought up old disagreements about how to tackle these issues, and really, I think, challenged the government on what it will do next and how it will manage this. The Prime Minister quickly turned the topic to strengthening gun laws in the wake of this horrific tragedy. It's fair to say there has been a backlash from the Jewish community and from the opposition who've claimed gun control is a diversion from addressing the root cause of anti-Semitism. And I said it yesterday in the Politics Now pod, I think there is absolute merit to that argument. Gun laws is only one part of a broader issue. Anti-Semitism is at the heart of this. It was Jewish Australians that were gunned down, and that is indisputable. So if we don't discuss how to tackle that, then I actually think we're not getting this right at all. We're going to look at the pressure facing the Prime Minister here, how he'll step up, because there are many conversations in government about trying to get that right. Chris Minns has now recalled the New South Wales Parliament to strengthen gun laws. We're going to tease out if that puts pressure on the Prime Minister to do the same in terms of recalling the Parliament. We're recording this on a Thursday morning. We haven't heard that yet. The opposition. And then MAIFO, which is the mid-year economic update, which is like a mini-budget, was supposed to be the story of the week and, well, wasn't, but we'll still, of course, look at that. So all of these things we'll look at. And Fran, it's sort of changed us, hasn't it?
Well, PK, I'm in Sydney, as I said, on Gadigal land, but I'm on the eastern suburbs, so I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of Jewish Australians in the last 5 days. I've been down to Bondi to the Hanukkah services that are happening there every night. And there are thousands of Australians, not just Jewish Australians, but many Jewish Australians and many Australians down there showing their support and concern and sharing their grief too, because this has changed Australia. You know, I've heard stories of on Talkback Radio of people who've been to the blood banks and lined up literally for hours and hours and hours with people from, as they say, all nations and races, like completely multicultural Australia, because there is also a sense of support, I think, across the country. So, I think that is something we should not lose sight of. But there is much to be done. There are many levers to pull. I think gun reform is important too. I've spoken to many Australians who that's the first question they've asked. So I think we can talk about all of this. And luckily for us on the podcast, for all of us, we've got a perfect guest this week in Karen Middleton, the political journalist and contributor to The Monthly. Karen, welcome to the Party Room.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Karen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I don't have enough words to describe the level of distress of the week we've just experienced on so many levels too, for the families that have lost their loved ones, for the Jewish people I know that are, Fran mentioned, but, many personal friends of mine who I know are genuinely scared, proper fear for their children. You know, I think a lot of us have been saying, hey, we've got your back. That's what I say. But it's raising on a broader level, like going beyond the personal, big questions. We're going to start with a response, though, from the Prime Minister, Karen, because it is a politics podcast. So we are discussing this. I want to say it really blatantly. We're discussing this through a political prism as well, understanding how politically this is being managed. Anthony Albanese has felt the full force of the hurt and the anger of the Jewish community since Sunday. No one has been louder in their fury and blame than former Treasurer Josh Frydenberg, the most senior Jewish person ever in a cabinet, who's been leading this. He's been outspoken on this for a long time, way before this terrorist attack. He went to Bondi and he laid the blame directly on the Prime Minister.
Our Prime Minister, our government, has allowed Australia to be radicalised on his watch. It's time for him to accept personal responsibility for the death of 15 innocent people, including a 10-year-old child.
Karen, that was quite an accusation from the former Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, who's not, I would say, not usually an inflammatory person, but as PK mentioned, he has been loud in his criticism of the government since really the whole time, since October the 7th. In that Bondi speech, he accused the PM of abandoning Jewish Australians. Karen, how have you judged the PM's response to Sunday's terrorist attack? Has it been enough, and I guess this is a bigger question which we'll get to, that accusation from Josh Frydenberg and others that the PM has abandoned Jewish Australians?
Well, you're right. Josh Frydenberg will feel this extremely deeply as a member of the Jewish community, and Jewish Australians feel it more deeply than any of the rest of us, and we're all horrified and shell-shocked, as you say. I think the Prime Minister has looked shell-shocked since Sunday night. That's understandable because, as I say, we all are. But I think that there's probably been some surprise at the absence of a visceral response from him. It has seemed not as visceral.
That's a really good word, Karen.
It has seemed not as visceral as some others, and I'm not sure why that is. Whether it's exhaustion at the end of a long year, and that's not an excuse. I don't know what the explanation for that is. We have seen him be visceral in other situations and emotional, and so I think there's been some surprise that we have seen less of that from him initially, and on top of the anger from the Jewish community because of the warnings they have been making. They have been saying they were frightened. They have been saying that they want a greater sense of reassurance. I think that's where the volatility, the potency in the criticism comes. This is just this sense of a lack of personal deep engagement. Now, that might be unfair, and it might sound unfair, but I'm just trying to analyse the atmospherics, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I think that might be where this extra layer of criticism is coming in. The government and the Prime Minister have been saying that they have been doing things, and they have been doing things. And we often say words without actions, are not enough. But I think also actions without words are sometimes not enough. And maybe there has been a sense of a lack of forceful rhetoric at a personal level about the community. Now, that's going to be a point that will be debated forever and people will have different views. But there's clearly anger in the Jewish community at the government and the Prime Minister and some other ministers. I think he he wasn't, I think he was told he wasn't welcome at the funerals. And so if you're told you weren't welcome, you won't go. And I think that is now being exploited a little bit by others in the political domain. But there's nothing he can do about that. You're not going to turn up somewhere where you've been told you're not welcome.
Absolutely, you can't, right? But equally, it's unusual. So if you have a big moment like this, I'm thinking Port Arthur obviously being the biggest event we've had outside of this, you have a prime minister that, you know, hugs the grieving, right? That is a kind of iconic, normal image to see, and it sends a signal to the rest of the country that the leader of the country is part of that. Now, I know why he can't, but it also is unusual and it's creating political problems for him. That's the truth.
Yeah, but I do think that comparison is slightly problematic because, you know, I was working in politics when Port Arthur occurred in 1996 and it was horrendous. But there wasn't the same back issue to that there is with this. It's a different situation. We had a new prime minister. It came out of the blue. There wasn't the sense of a personal or governmental failure.
Exactly.
There was a sense that there was a policy failure in the broad, but not in the specific. And so in that sense, the country was more united. There were obviously concerns in Mr. Howard's own constituency, and so there were domestic political concerns in a very specific way, but they were different than the politics here. This is a completely different atmosphere.
I agree with that, Karen. I was there too. And you know, John Howard has deservedly got much praise for those gun laws and staring down his own constituency, as you say, particularly in the National Party, though I think Tim Fischer deserved an enormous amount of credit for that too. But really, the country, the entire country was on board with doing something about guns. It was, in that sense, not a hard thing. Of course, it was hard politically, but it was not a hard thing in that he had the nation behind him.
That's right.
It's different here.
Yeah. I mean, I think the nation wants action here, but I think there are complex issues underlying it. There have been criticisms levelled in lots of directions about the way things have been handled. There's been politicisation of the issues around the horrendous Hamas attack on Israel and the Israeli response in Gaza for 2 years. And all of that is the backdrop to the appalling events of last weekend.
Yeah, I think that's right. And when I was saying making the comparison is absolutely different. That's the point. But equally, we're talking about a situation where there are people dead and a national leader is part of that grieving process with those people, which can't happen because of all the reasons you've mentioned, right?
Yeah,
literally.
Right.
And that's what makes this, if I can use it, it's heartbreaking, but it's absolutely ugly to watch as well because it's febrile. There's an anger to it. And I think the people at the centre of feeling the anger are the most important people here, right? Like, no one would dispute that. Their anger matters, right? So, and I'm not talking Josh Frydenberg. He is entitled to his anger too as a Jewish Australian who sends his kids to Jewish schools and feels fear because of that. But I'm talking about the people there and the way that the Prime Minister connects with that, which has been almost impossible for him to do, which makes it, have you seen a precedent for a situation like this? I haven't. Like, it's pretty, we're in really difficult territory, aren't we?
Yes, I think we are in difficult territory. And the politics that overlays all of this, and I mean party politics as well as global politics, makes it extremely complicated because we did see the politicisation of this issue in the past 2 years and in the lead up to the federal election in May. And so there's a legacy of all of that.
I think we saw the Prime Minister over those 2 years try and get that balance right. You know, he's a man who likes consensus. He's a man who doesn't want a sort of anger and you know, they talk a lot about social cohesion. So for these 2 years, his instinct has been trying to manage those competing griefs and fury and fear, and he's probably still in that mode and it hasn't helped his communication here. Piquet, you're absolutely right. You know, there is a time for clear and to use Karen's word, visceral response, and that's what people need to see here, particularly the Jewish community who are the targets here. And I think we've seen a recognition of that by some of the responses from the senior Jewish Labor members. We've had Josh Burns, who's, you know, obviously a Jewish Labor MP in Victoria, saying we have to be willing to show leadership.
We need to rise to this occasion and we need to recognise that we are in charge and it is our responsibility as members of the government to meet this moment and to stamp out anti-Semitism, because what has happened here to a community that I love and a community I've grown up in that has turned to
We had similar sentiment from Mark Dreyfus, who said on AM, you know, there's more we can do and we can do it, you know, quickly and with more energy. So I think these are signals from the Jewish members of the Labor caucus to say we need to be clearer here and stronger here. And, you know, now the PM obviously thought that's what he was being with gun ownership. PK, I think you're saying that maybe that wasn't the right lever to pull first. I don't necessarily think with that. I think it was a good one. The Jewish community, as I say, every single member I've spoken to, and there's been quite a few, have said this is not about guns, this is about hate speech.
That's
and
right.
Then former Prime Minister John Howard came in with that intervention this week, which I must say I was surprised at, dismissing the Prime Minister convening to talk about gun laws as a diversion.
I do not want this debate, post this horrible event, to be used, the focus on guns to be used as a pretext to avoid the broader debate about the spread of hatred of Jewish people and anti-Semitism. And I see in the behaviour...
I don't know what you think, Karen or PK, but, you know, like I say, I think a lot of Australians were wondering how come this guy had six pump action and other shotguns legally. Something's wrong here. I'm not sure that that was the wrong lever to pull. It's just that to show leadership at a moment like this is key. He is the leader of the nation and he needs to be able to send out many messages at once, and he needs to be displaying emotion and strength, and gun laws is just a part of that.
I don't think it's the wrong thing to do to be tackling gun laws, but I do think in the absence, and we're now using this word a lot, of that visceral reaction to the anti-Semitism and that the nature of the attack, some people have seen that as unbalanced. To be fair to the Prime Minister, this is a dilemma for a Prime Minister. If we go back to the period after the October 7 attacks in 2023 and that period between then and now, and certainly in the lead up to the election, there was a great deal of personal anguish and rage coming from a number of directions. So I do think gun laws are important, but obviously it's not enough. And finally, we are hearing the government start to express that we need to do more. I think the other thing that's important to note is, you know, there were changes to the criminal code early in the year that the government brought forward that do relate to hate speech in some dimensions, but they related to speech that was encouraging violence, advocating for force or violence, and the addition of a recklessness clause. So previously under the criminal code, it was an offence if you were intending to cause violence, and now it's if you're reckless as to whether, you know, your comments about people might bring violence. Yeah. Allegra Spender, the member for Wentworth, whose electorate Bondi is in, tried to expand that. Allegra Spender's amendments were about outlawing promoting hatred, and they were based on legislation or law in Western Australia that functions there, that has functioned to prosecute people for promoting hatred, and also has been proven to be able to weed out low-level alleged offences and say that, no, they don't deserve prosecution. Mm. So there's obviously nuance in the WA law, and she was arguing for that. And neither the government nor the opposition would support them. I think now we're going to be looking at that again.
Yeah, we are. And what I've observed, and I don't think you dispute this, is that the Prime Minister, who I do think was found kind of to be in uncomfortable territory, has strengthened his language as the week has gone on. So there has been a shift, and I suspect we're recording this Thursday morning, there'll be more of a shift. I see this happening, and I don't just see it from the outside. I talk to people internally. It's happening, right? Like they've got the memo, guys. They get that they need to sound pretty serious about the action they'll take. We had Mark Dreyfus, who is a former Attorney General in the country, was, of course, the most senior in the Albanese government, of this Labor government, Jewish cabinet minister, remember. He got dumped. I've had, by the way, a few comments from Labor MPs who are not you know, happy about him being dumped, going, how wouldn't it have been good to have him around right now, right, in a senior position, not just on the backbench? So just...
Yeah, well, that was obvious at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, mate, hasn't it come to fruition, though, through this? They needed him out today. And so here we have Dreyfus saying they may need to be strengthening those laws.
I said on Monday that although we had passed tough hate speech laws in 2024, and some people have been charged under those laws, we need to review those hate speech laws to make sure that the settings are right. We need to have another look.
And now there's this new fight, because there's always a new fight, guys, on whether we need a royal commission. The government saying, and Dreyfus also saying this morning on AM, well, hang on a minute, royal commissions delay action. They make a good point, by the way. They do. You do need to take immediate action, but the coalition's going hard on this, saying you need a royal commission into anti-Semitism. I suspect we're going to get one, by the way. I know the government hasn't conceded it yet, but I reckon they're going to end up throwing everything at this. This is his moment, and if you cannot rise to the challenge of a moment like this, I think you will lose political authenticity and authority.
Well, yes, but it's the more people talk about stepping up, I mean, what does that mean and look like? Everyone will have a different view of that, and I think that probably just increases the pressure and maybe makes it harder, to be honest. But yes, of course, it's a pivotal moment. I don't doubt that he is devastated at what has occurred. He's the Prime Minister,
exactly.
And people have died. And I think, you know, there's clearly been a message that somehow his personal response is seen to have not been what people expected. And I think you're starting to see that change. And I think you'll probably see both the language, and we're already seeing that, and the tone and the content all shifting over the coming days. And yep. I think we're already hearing from the government that there will be more announcements. So I think they will hope that can start to address some of the, you know, immediate concerns, but there's obviously a longer term question, and I just think that's impossible to answer at the moment of what the impact of this is politically. And in some ways, you know, I'm not sure that I want to talk about the long term implications because people are dead.
Well, I think that's right. I think, you know, I think it's not the time, and I think we need action. I think you know, there's a few things here that, yes, the government, as you say, Karen, introduced hate laws,
yes.
And then they got concerted criticism for those hate laws not really being enacted strongly enough. Some of that was on the police. You know, yes, there were laws, but the police in Victoria or New South Wales didn't necessarily understand that, you know, globalised the intifada, for instance, could be classified in that way, and we were working through that when, you know, death to the IDF, is that a breach of the law? The Jewish community saw that as inflammatory, and as you say, PK, they were getting more and more scared by the protests. The protests were about something happening globally that this community was grief-stricken about. It's an awful backdrop to this event that has occurred, and I think that our law enforcement, you know, initially weren't strong enough too around what was happening within the protests, not the protests themselves. We can't outlaw protests in Australia, but, you know, Chris Minns has got something to say on that, but we shouldn't. But we do need to make sure that they're not a mask, you know, that's not actors in there that are not, you know, have evil intent. And I think it's taken us a while to work that out, and the government has banned the Nazi symbols and the symbols of hate, but our law enforcement's taken a while to catch up. But I think that's happening. But in terms of a royal commission, well, I mean, I don't really understand a royal commission that can look at our intelligence agency's response and failures, perhaps, we don't know yet, and our police response in Bondi, New South Wales, and anti-Semitism. I'm struggling to think of how that would work, and I think what we need now is action. We need to, of course, the intelligence agencies need to be having inquiry immediately about whether things were missed, or is this just, as Malcolm Turnbull said, very, very difficult when you have lone actors? You know, we need to respond now. And PK, I think you're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, Chris Minns' response, because a number of people have said how strong he's appeared. But I think the calls for the Parliament to be resumed, it's happening in New South Wales. I think it probably should happen federally. We should bring Parliament back next week. I think the Prime Minister should be setting up now a task force within his cabinet, either cabinet level or perhaps led by Mark Dreyfus, you know, with that is acting just on this and coming up with an action plan that they implement. The government should be ready because they've had months to be ready with what are the elements of the Gillian Segal report that they are prepared and willing to enact immediately, and it's not all of it, and there needs to be action now. We know that the Prime Minister is not, you know, hard-hearted on this. We know he immediately called on his caucus members like Josh Burns, like Mark Dreyfus on Monday, that he, you know, spoke to Jewish leaders on Monday, that he spoke at length to Gillian Segal on Monday. We know he has implemented the appropriate response. It's just that it hasn't been in public and he hasn't been able to say what they are doing beyond that gun debate. And, yeah, I think it's time because, as David Littleproud was quick to say in one of his interviews this week, you know, he's saying the Prime Minister has missed his moment. Well, Labor MP Josh Burns, his words were, we must show that we are willing to meet this moment. And I think that's true.
A few points I'd be keen to make. On the point of an inquiry, I do think there should be an inquiry, and I think there needs to be a public inquiry of some kind. I don't think you need to wait for an inquiry. I think we've seen governments use royal commissions as an excuse for inaction in the past when you're looking at a broad endemic problem like, say, the aged care system or something like that. You know, they've said, oh, we need to wait to see what the royal commission says. I don't think you could get away with that in this case.
Not to mention the wait on implementing the recommendations that occur frequently for decades
indeed,
sometimes.
And I think you would want an inquiry that was focused on this event and on how it happened.
Yes.
You need that. Whatever private reviews and inquiries go on in the intelligence and security services, I think the public will expect some kind of public inquiry.
Yeah, good point.
So I do feel like there's a need for that, but I don't think that would stop the government acting in the interim, and I think we will see that. And we have, and I think the problem with the Gillian Segal report is there hasn't been a moment of response. There have been things done. Some of what she has recommended have been acted on, and she's acting on them herself as well with the government's support. And she has made the point that, you know, there would need to be tweaking, that now isn't the time for blame. You know, she hasn't stood up and said, why hasn't the government done anything with my report? So, but I think that it's been able to be, you know, the finger's been able to be pointed at the government because there wasn't a moment of response. There wasn't a sort of formal moment where the Prime Minister or the government said, here's where we're up to with this report.
Yep.
This is what we're doing. And so they're having to do that retrospectively, and that feels like catching up when, in fact, there have been legitimate steps taken along the way.
Yes, I do think that, and I think you're right. In fact, I was wanting to ask you, PK, what you think about the opposition's response to this so far, because at a moment of a national trauma like this, and I don't think that's overstating it, we are used to seeing, I think, national unity from our politicians, and it sort of grated with me when that's not the response we got from the opposition. We got this criticism straight away.
There is palpable anger because anti-Semitism in Australia has been left to fester. We've seen a clear lack of leadership in keeping Jewish Australians safe.
That's not to say the government should get a, you know, get an easy go. I just wonder what you think about, they must have made a decision to not just go with the sentiment of the time, which was trauma. And yes, there was the anger, of course, amongst the Jewish community that we've talked about, but sort of trauma and healing when we've seen such, you know, goodness too arise from the Australian community. Ahmed Elamed, you know, a Muslim Australian, and there was the responses from Australians generally. You know, there has been an overwhelming positive response from the Australian community to the Jewish community, I think. And so it's interesting we've got this contrast with the political response, and I just wonder what you thought about that.
It's interesting to me that we did see that initially, Fran, on Sunday night, when the statement that Susan Lee put out talked about offering all support to the government, standing with the government. But by Monday morning, that had changed. So
yeah, that was very quick.
I think she probably came under pressure, probably within the coalition and also maybe from the Jewish community, to push back harder on the government over a range of things. Now, I do understand the Jewish community's anger. And so, you know, we're in complicated territory where because you can't say they're not entitled to express that anger. And so you kind of can't say that political leaders are not entitled to reflect that anger. Mm. The issue, I suppose, is when it strays into politicisation of that anger. And that's the debate that is being had. I do think it's also interesting that there was such a sudden move, including involving John Howard, to criticise the proposed measures on gun control as the wrong emphasis, when, of course, that is the issue that's going to cause the coalition grief. It already is. You're already hearing from the Nationals saying, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Well, the current gun laws were not the problem. It was the people who were using the guns and using the bombs. They were terrorists. This was an act of terror that slaughtered innocent Australians, that targeted
And
Jewish
we remember
Australians
that the Nationals are under pressure from that. One Nation, and they've just lost a member to One Nation, a very prominent member, a former Deputy Prime Minister, no less. So it's interesting to me that there's been such a quick emphasis to say, no, guns aren't the issue, it's anti-Semitism. And I, for all the reasons we talked about before, don't disagree that we need both to be emphasised. But there is also some internal politics on that that's not irrelevant on the coalition side.
Yeah, that strengthening you just talked about, Karen, like from the kind of full bipartisanship to a sudden, you know, the political. Look, I've been saying it on the Politics Now podcast all week. Like my view is that yes, it's clearly very political. I think Susan Lee was under enormous pressure. Also her leadership, don't forget that this is kind of her kind of answering the sort of right-wing critiques. She's been very much going on and speaking to the right-wing media as well, more than even usual, like making sure that she sends these messages that she's tough on these issues when there is this internal pressure on her and her leadership. And I think it's muted some of that pressure at the moment. That's my analysis, that I think it's kind of put it off a little because there's something very serious that's happening in our country that I think they are. I don't think they're fabricating their care here, by the way. I think they are very passionate about this issue they do believe. I think they really believe this. They really think that this has not been good enough and that all of these actions should be taken. Like it's deeply ingrained in their DNA of what they believe.
And
it's
as not, Karen said, you know, they are reflecting the sentiment amongst much of the Jewish community.
That is the best point that Karen has made. Like she's made many good points. Seriously. No, but it's true. There is only authenticity to what you say if it's backed up by a sort of collective view from somewhere, and that exists here. So this isn't just them on their own banging on about something, is it? Like, you know, it's reflecting a genuine frustration. Yeah. And I mean, like, I'll give you an example. Today's going to be, we talked about the funerals, right? And that this is, we have not even buried the dead yet. Like it's, you know, like we are so in the land of trauma still, like extreme shock and trauma. Today, Matilda will be buried. Matilda's family is from Ukraine. I think we know what's happened in Ukraine. There's a war still there. There is an attack from Russia. Her family is from Ukraine. If you just think about like the story of this 10-year-old, a delightful child that she has died on a beach in Bondi when her family's from Ukraine. Like, I mean, I think that kind of gives you the sense of why this has broken the brain of many Australians. Like that.
And there is a question of the timing of these forceful responses and whether it comes immediately or whether it should have waited for later. Sometimes it's impossible to control the timing of such things. That will be subject to debate when we talk about politics a long time from now, I think.
And PK, you know that point you make there about Matilda, and it's just heartbreaking. You know, one woman I spoke to said she got calls from her family in Israel checking on how she is, and she said, this shouldn't be how it is. I'm in Australia. I should be fine. This is, you know, this is all wrong. And so that notion of Matilda's family dealing with all that grief and horror in Ukraine here in Australia and now suffering this loss. It's just
well, and a man
wrong.
Who survived the Holocaust and dies on a Bondi beach.
It's all wrong.
It goes against everything we believe about the safety of our country.
So we've just hit pause before wrapping the podcast with Karen to listen to the Prime Minister speak.
Look, of course more could have always been done. Governments aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. We have engaged in a constructive way. There wasn't a special envoy on anti-Semitism before this government came to office.
We've been having this huge discussion about where the government will go next on this terror attack and on delivering proper, serious and meaningful reforms to anti-Semitism. Well, it's happened. The Prime Minister has stood up with his anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Siegel, with his Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke. He's also stood up with Jason Clare, the Education Minister. We are talking the full gamut. We've also had the AFP Commissioner, Chrissy Barrett, stand up, and they have announced a huge response to anti-Semitism. I think going much further than I think the government would have in the past. They've announced some huge changes. But what I think is really key, so we are now re-recording our takeouts of what this is, because it is huge and significant. And I think what we've seen, I'm going to throw it to you, Fran, what we've seen from the Prime Minister as I see it is what I would call a mea culpa in some ways in terms of the government's culpability here, the government's response, his own response and what he's done. He's essentially said, I mean, that line, more could have been done. He accepts responsibility. He says he's not perfect and now trying to meet that challenge. Fran, how did you, what's your response to what we saw, which I do think is like quite a moment after this terror attack?
It was definitely a moment. I think the Prime Minister's tone was right. And as you say, he had absolutely sort of a battalion of people around him, some cabinet ministers and the commissioner and Gillian Siegel, importantly, the special envoy, anti-Semitism. Yes, he did. It was a mea culpa. He was asked, in a sense he was saying the obvious, I could always do more. But then he went on and said, I accept my responsibility for my part, that, you know, more wasn't done, but I also respect my responsibility for acting now to do more. And what he said is people aren't looking for more division, they're looking to come together. But he said, and this struck it with me, I have done my best. Now, amongst all of this was a list of things the government has done, including, interestingly, a list of the elements of the special envoy's report that she put out some months ago that the government has implemented. That, as you know, Karen mentioned, we haven't had that moment where the government had presented that. We got that more today. And so I thought it was that line from the Prime Minister. He said, I am angry, but I've done my best. Gillian Siegel, I thought, had a very strong line too, where she said, and this was quite pointed, I think, I am very grateful for the support. I am very grateful for the support I have received from the government through these last months. So she is doing her bit there, I think, to say, look, I don't feel like they've ignored it. She said, I've been working with them. And I thought that was an interesting thing for her to say. Karen, was there something that jumped out for you? And maybe you could give us a bit of a sense of the lengths the government has now announced it will go to, it will implement, because there's quite a lot to this package, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I also thought it was quite pointed that Gillian Siegel did note that she was glad there was a response, and the implication was finally there was that moment. So I think she was also saying that.
This more formal response has been a long time coming. But of course, it does build on a range of activities and work that started as soon as the report was delivered. It is an important next step.
Bit of side eye there, yeah.
Well, she's been very measured, and I thought she was measured again.
She has been measured.
But she is making the point that I guess we talked about before, that there wasn't a moment and that was important to the Jewish community, and now we have it. So we've got a package of proposed legislative changes. The government is not committing to pulling the parliament back before Christmas because they're saying they want to make sure they get them right so that they are constitutionally sound and aren't going to be subject to challenge, which I think is a pretty valid point. They're talking about...
And they want to make sure they get support from the community and the parliament for them too.
Yeah.
They do that.
They're talking about an aggravated hate speech offence, particularly targeting those preachers and leaders. I mean, I'm puzzled when Tony Burke says that they didn't all meet the threshold. I mean, there was one who gave speeches that were talking about killing Jews, and there was a successful civil law action taken by the Jewish community through the Human Rights Commission and to the federal court that had that upheld as a breach of human rights law in a civil sense. So I don't understand why that wasn't deemed to be advocating violence under existing law, under existing criminal law, which, you know.
I think it's interesting and I think it's welcome that they've singled out the preachers because, you know, there's how many times have we seen, stories written of preachers who've been preaching, you know, what can only be described as hate speech, whether they haven't crossed that threshold or made that threshold, as Tony Burke was saying, is, you know, I guess probably true on many occasions because nothing has happened, but that has changed now. And I was really heartened by, in fact, impressed by the commentary from the AFP commissioner. She said, you know, since she's become commissioner, she's had a pretty intense focus on who is preaching what they're saying, where they're saying it, and clearly, you know, they're in her sights. And I think that is welcome. And it is time for that.
And I think in that package that they've announced, other things they are doing, increasing the penalties for hate speech that promotes violence, making hate an aggravating factor in some of these offences, a narrow federal offence for serious vilification. There'll be new visa cancellation powers for people who are expressing anti-Semitism. The Home Affairs Minister made the point that he already has cancelled a number of visas, but these powers will make it easier to do that, he says. David Gonski to lead a 12-month task force that's going to involve the anti-Semitism envoy they want that position to stay in perpetuity now, and also the E-Safety Commissioner working together on forward-looking measures. The disaster funding arrangements are being activated, New South Wales and federal government working together to share the responsibility of that, and that they've flagged more to say on gun laws and other matters. So it's a wide-ranging package. It goes to education, to Holocaust education in schools, to working with universities to better crack down on oppression and anti-Semitism on uni campuses. So it is a wide-ranging response now.
It is a really wide-ranging response, and you know, I'm not saying we'll see in the fullness of time, the coming hours, whether there's criticism that some isn't enough, but let's be clear here. We've had the envoy stand with the Prime Minister, the envoy essentially endorsing this approach that the government's now taking coming out of her report. So that really gives the government a lot of, I think, authority to say, with the Jewish community who are angry, to say, hang on a minute, we are taking this seriously. Now, you know, I'm getting some commentary from even people internally in the Labor Party going, well, look, you know what? Like, this is good, but God, just a bit late. I think that's right. I think it is. And I think what I found really significant, I want to throw this to you, Fran, is the Prime Minister, and I want to give a bit of a character analysis here, a little one. He's known, anyone who knows him well, and I've observed this many times, he does bristle. He doesn't like being criticised, right? He gets a bit sort of defensive. But I saw today a Prime Minister who clearly has been rocked by this experience to have the biggest terror event on his watch and a particular cultural and religious group being targeted like this, and to feel the visceral criticism, which we've referred to. Now we're recording post-press conference, but all of that commentary is still true, the visceral criticism of what he's done. I saw a Prime Minister, Fran, that knew he had to own it, that knew he had to talk about regret. So that is because he's read the room and he knows that he has to own it. He cannot keep saying, oh, no, we've done enough. He can't say that anymore. It does not work anymore. Like, that's significant, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's true. He's certainly read the room, but as he also acknowledged publicly, being pushed by the journalists at the press conference about why haven't you been out in public, as we were talking before, I suppose, you know, hugging the victims and going to the funerals, and were you invited? He didn't answer that, but what he did say was, I've reached out to families. Here I am covering the National Security Committee of Cabinet. In other words, I can't be at Matilda's funeral, was the sort of subtext of that. But he did say, I respect that people are grieving and I've had some difficult conversations. So he acknowledged that he's received the full force of the criticism, I think, from the Jewish communities, particularly the victims and the victims' families here. He's heard it. He's responded. He's got, as I say, a phalanx of government response here amongst him, cabinet ministers, his safety commissioner, federal police commissioner, the special envoy, David Gonski. This is a full court press from the government. Will it shield him from the criticism or the discomfort of the fact that he has not been and may still not be able to be in that public, you know, mourner-in-chief role that you know, Karen talked about for John Howard after Port Arthur. I think that's difficult for him, and he's acknowledging that. And, you know, hence we get he's saying he's angry, but he also accepts more could always be done.
He clearly didn't want to say the families don't want me there, but the implication was, when he says I respect the views of the families, the implication was the message had been received that his presence there would you know, detract or make a political scene or be unwelcome. And so he clearly didn't want to say that. I was a little surprised, I have to say, that he didn't speak from the heart in his opening statement about his feelings. He read that his heart goes out to the victims. Now, I'm not doubting the sincerity, and I'm sure he wanted to make sure he got his language absolutely right. But where we saw the more personal take was in answers to questions, where he said, of course, I could always, more could always have been done. Governments aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. And then later on, I did my best. Now, there'll be a debate about that, but he is saying, I did my best. I'm aware of the criticism. And I think that was the most personal sort of take we've seen thus far, really.
That's right. I agree with that. But there was one thing he did say at the top, which I think is significant and does rise to the moment, where he did say, I am angry. Yeah.
They were almost his first words, and I noted that.
I am angry, and I did too, because it goes to the point you were making earlier, before we knew all this and how they'd respond, Karen, which is like we haven't seen that visceralness, you know, that sort of, and yes, about time we heard about anger, because you should be angry.
And he's trying to communicate that. That's right. He's trying
to need
to
be angry
that.
When a group of Australians are hunted down and killed. That's an angry moment. That is an angry moment for the Prime Minister. And through the anger, we're now seeing actually a response that won't be without criticism. I suspect there'll be criticism. There always is. But I think it is a meaningful response, and it'll be interesting to see whether it resets some of this, although it will never bring those dead people back, and we know it. It'll never bring those people back. Nothing ever will. But, you know, you do need to actually set the terms for how this country continues. I want to make one more point, and I think it's powerful too. We heard a really strong line from him as well about, you know, leave your hatreds overseas if you want to come to Australia. All of that rhetoric, Karen, I just want to pick your brain on it. That rhetoric is very, it's sort of a Labor version of the kind of, you know, tough line on people coming here that don't share our values. It's a, you know, that's how I hear it, because I know that there is a strong growing right-wing kind of sentiment which is anti-multicultural. It's a sort of antidote to that, but still acknowledging that those hatreds should not be here. Did you hear it that way?
Well, I think it's a message to all of us. I mean, yes, it's a message to the people coming to Australia, and that's the way it was couched, but it's a message to everyone in Australia. Not only don't bring your hatreds here, but don't bring other hatreds, other countries' hatreds, global hatreds into this country by whatever means. Yeah. This is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. And I think that that's the underlying message of all of that.
And I thought too, don't pass them on to your children. I thought it was particularly powerful when the Education Minister, Jason Clare, said children aren't born anti-Semitic, children aren't born full of hate. And so the message here is, as a nation, we have to absolutely emphasise and instil the values that we hold dear as Australians into the entire community and into the kids that are, you know, brought up in our schools, so that we don't, you know, Anthony Albanese described anti-Semitism as an ancient hate. It is an ancient hate, but we have to, in modern times, we have to do everything we can to explain it to people, to diffuse it, and to make sure it's not, you know, regrown here in our society. And I thought I think that's a very good initiative from the government, this schools task force, and I think that was well said by the minister.
This event isn't just, you know, an event that happened this week. It's not just a normal news cycle sort of you know, story. This has changed the country. It's changed politics. It's changed, I think, the way all of us understand each other and our sort of sense of safety, and I think no more profoundly than for Jewish people. But this week was meant to be, you know, when things were simpler, the mid-year economic update. That's a key moment for the Treasurer and the Finance Minister. Of course, they still delivered it, as they should, because we should always continue to do things like and not let terrorists stop us. And part of that is the budget update. That happens still.
Now, the overall story of this mid-year budget update is delivery, responsibility and restraint. We are strengthening the budget, we're reducing debt, we're delivering on our commitments and we're ensuring...
But it completely got overshadowed, completely as it should be. But what was in it, Karen? Like, what was the significance of it? Did we actually learn anything about the government's economic direction, which will still be a very big issue for people, of course, coming into next year?
Well, there's sort of good news and bad news in it. And the Treasurer did say the big decisions are not coming now. The big decisions are still coming next year. Next year will be year two of the parliamentary term. That's traditionally when you get the nastiest budget. So I would expect that there will be decisions that involve cuts to spending coming next year. But what we saw on the good news side was that the deficit for this year looks like it'll be less, about $5 billion better than we thought. Over 4 years, the cumulative deficit's going to be better. So that's the good news. Inflation, unfortunately, though, as the forecasts have been revised up, that's not really surprising given what we've heard from the Reserve Bank lately, that they have interest rates on hold and they might even have to put them up next year if inflation keeps going up like it's been doing. So that's not good news. We've seen excise revenue from tobacco absolutely go through the floor, which is clearly that black market problem that the government is still grappling with. They're not getting the money they used to. They've saved a heap of money from the public service through consultants and through travel expenses and the like. There's probably some more they could save through their own travel expenses, but that's a debate for another day. But we still have deficits sort of out to the horizon. So it's a mixed picture and the government's putting the best possible spin on it, as governments do. But I think next year in the budget, we're going to see some hard decisions, and we have to see some hard decisions about where revenue is going to come from to pay for important programs that are embedded in our economy that we need to keep that are getting more and more expensive.
You know, we thought this week on the podcast would all be about the entitlement saga again that has been plaguing the Communications Minister, Annika Wells, and others in the government. That's completely disappeared in the enormity of Sunday's tragedy, the terrorist attack. On Monday, on your podcast, PK, Claire Armstrong said that issue's just been bookmarked. But, you know, I guess it will rear its head again next year. But for now, as we kept saying in this podcast, everything's changed.
That's just it. Everything's changed. Yes, other things will be reported on next year, including the tricky things for the government, including, of course, this expenses scandal. That will continue. It'll come back. Things always do, don't they, Karen? They always come back. You know, that's the way the news cycle works. But I do think the frame now is unchangeable. It is this tragedy, the aftermath of this tragedy, and how to get Australia back into a position where people feel safe, particularly that the Jewish community, but you know, our general community feeling like the country is back on the right track. That's going to be the big challenge for the government now. What do you think, Karen?
Yes, of course. I think there's the frame for bringing the country together and generating optimism and a feeling of safety and security is completely different than it was a week ago, and that will be a huge challenge for the government going forward, for all our political leaders. Everyone has a responsibility. All of us in the media have a responsibility to think about the way we present things. And that is our national responsibility to pull together and support each other, I think. And I hope we all take permanent lessons from this about that.
Well said, Karen. And Karen, thank you so much for joining us. It was it's a terrible time. It's a terrible time, but we need to keep having conversations about how all of us do all of this better.
I agree with that. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Karen. Fran, this is our final regular-ish episode of The Party Room this year.
Yeah, nothing regular about it though, is it, PK? Look, hopefully we answered some of our listeners' questions about the Bondi attack throughout our chat with Karen today. But while we don't have a specific question time segment today, over summer we will be delivering in spades, I promise you. We've got some question time only episodes. So just episodes only devoted to your questions, and we answer a whole bunch of your very insightful and clever questions.
Yeah, they're excellent questions always. The party rumours, as we like to call them, are the best. Your questions are always brilliant, and Fran and I love answering them. Please send them to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. That email address is also in the show notes.
And over summer, you'll also hear our Canberra live show with Jacob Greber, wrapping the year that was in politics. We recorded that in early December, so it was before this awful event that we've been talking about today, but it's more about the political year that was.
Yeah, that's right, Fran. Politics Now will be rolling out an exciting new series too. I'm really excited for you to hear this as well. So there will be plenty of content for your summer listening from us.
Yeah, so, you know, it's an awful way to end this year of the Party Room, sort of weekly. But before we go, PK, you know, it has been a massive year and a huge year for the podcast, your podcast, and the launch of Politics Now. It wouldn't have been possible without the brilliant people who took time out of their actual jobs to help get the beast off the ground. That's the techs, Paul Penton, Christian Zappa, Ellis Fitzpatrick. PK, I know you want to say a huge thank you to them, and of course to our incredible producer, Lara Heaton.
Yeah, Lara is a legend. And of course, Jess, who worked on the show too throughout the year. Jess has been brilliant too. Like, you know,
I just want to say congratulations on Politics Now. It's a fantastic addition to the ABC's political coverage, to the political coverage generally. And I think you, PK, and all of you and all your guests just have done a great job.
Oh, thanks, Fran. I mean, it wouldn't have been possible, though, without the foundation of the Party Room, which is nearly a decade long, and it's been me and you. No, it's true. Like, working very – we built on that foundation that Fran and I built together, and the ABC, of course, the Daily podcast, and it has been a huge success. I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of all of my other co-hosts that every day we give you something new, because we thought there was an appetite in this country to talk about Australia's political direction, Australian policies – our community in Australia. What frustrated me, I do want to say this, I've always been passionate about saying this somewhere, so this is the right place. What frustrated me is that I was listening to daily podcasts about America. It was a thing for me. It annoyed me every day. And I love listening to them, don't get me wrong, but I thought, like, my country matters every day. People want to hear what happened in my country, in this country, in our country, about what happened in politics here, just like we get to there. And so we made it and it's worked and people really like it and I'm really proud of it and it will continue into the next year. And so thank you very much for everyone who's come along. And actually, we've got lots of new people who've started listening and that's been great too, especially like growing the Party Room family, Fran, because, you know, you're my like, you're my life partner in work, Fran. You're my great love in the politics world.
10 years, it is unbelievable, nearly 10 years. Well, that's it from us for this week. See you, PK.
See you, Fran.